In today's episode, I've discussed with Jen Root of Hawk Media, and we delved into the dynamic world of e-commerce partnerships and strategies. As the Vice President of Partnerships at Hawk Media, Jen brings a wealth of knowledge and experience, having played a pivotal role in establishing Hawk as a top-performance marketing agency. Throughout our discussion, Jen sheds light on the intricacies of managing a diverse team, fostering sustainable client growth, and navigating the challenges and opportunities in the rapidly evolving e-commerce landscape. We also explored the critical role of AI and personalization in today's marketing strategies, and delve into the importance of building genuine, value-driven partnerships in the digital age. Join us as we uncover Jen's unique insights and strategies that are reshaping the way we think about e-commerce and digital marketing. Let's get started. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Jen, how are you? I'm super excited to have you here. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, I mean, Jen, we've been discussing for quite a while, and I'm really happy that we had a chance to do this one. I'm really excited and interested about the topics we're going to discuss today, because you've done so much in the e-commerce space, the depth of knowledge and the experience all over the years. So how are you? What are you working on these days?
Well, these days, I'm the Vice President of Partnerships over at Hawk Media. So we're a full-service marketing agency. We were just recognized as the top performance marketing agency in the U.S. by Digital Marketing News. So I oversee our tech partnerships. I oversee strategic alliances. And I've been in the partnership space for some time. So feels great to be with the best of the best over at Hawk.
Yeah. So what it involves, and I know you have a lot of partners from variety of technologies and the workflows and services. I mean, let's dive in a little bit, try to explain more what it means, how the teams look like, and what are, your major responsibilities.
Yeah. So we have a team of 200. We're based in Los Angeles, Santa Monica, and we have just over 500 clients over management. So we do full service marketing. That's everything from paid media all the way down to the retention marketing side. And in partnerships, I oversee a team of four. So I have four partner managers that work with me. And then we are, really the cheerleaders and the advocates for Hawk, like on the front lines. So we're working on building relationships, sourcing new tech partners that add value and bring value to our current clients and also to our prospective clients. So we're always like solution architecting, and we're always on the hunt for just like best in class new technology that could help enhance the client experience. And really, when it comes to partnerships, it's all about just creating win-win opportunities for both parties. So, in partnerships, taking that like rising tide lifts all boats approach and looking at what solutions are best suited for the partner and the agency. That's everything from, partners like Vimy all the way to partners like Klaviyo and Google and Meta, et cetera. So.
Interesting. So what will be, without again mentioning probably names, what will be an ideal engagement? Can you describe this win-win setup?
Yeah, I mean, really, it's a lot of like, it goes past the transactional, right? Like thinking about truly bringing value to each other's businesses. And I feel like whoever that we do business with on the partner side, it should be enjoyable. Like you have to like the people that you're partnered up with, that you're doing business with, because it just makes the work that much more enjoyable. So like thinking about partnerships, thinking about creating win-wins, the first like litmus test that I always do with any partner is, do you feel like you can have good conversation with this individual? A partner of mine the other day, we were talking about like what really makes a good partner. And it was kind of the like soft skills. kind of process. Like, would you want to be sitting on an airplane with this person for like 6 hours and, you know, have a conversation? No, if the answer is no, then they're probably not a good partner. So moving past the transactional and really looking at, you know, building true relationships and bringing true value. And that could look different to every partner. You know, what's important to your business may not be important to an advertising partner's business, et cetera. So we really have to think in a couple different directions on the partnerships team in that regard.
Yes, it's very, very interesting what you said. I mean, going like back to the basics, having this human touch, trying to build things together between people. This is something that I hear a lot from all my guests, by the way, in the podcast, and also from, you know, brand and retailers that I talk to every day. And I think it has various, you know, reasons. Probably one of them is the rise of AI. People want to know that they're not spending time with bots and really with real people, right? Mm-hmm. And definitely any partnerships is like a relationship, right? It's like building some kind of a foundation of trust and working together to achieve some kind of a success. How mm-hmm. these partnerships are perceived by your customers, right? By the brands, by retailers? Is it because you're providing them variety of obviously services, technologies, consulting, also implementation? How these is perceived and how is this usually implemented from the customer side?
Yeah. So really, you know, we're an extension of that client's business. And, you know, we're really on the front lines as kind of these scouts. You know, what's mm-hmm. the newest technology, latest technology? Yes. But is it sustainable? Like, you know, there's some partners that they may not be viable or they may not have a good stronghold in the market. So we wouldn't want to bring them in until they're more established, as an example. So, you know, a lot of those businesses that are just like flashes in the pan or here today, gone tomorrow, just wouldn't be good fits. Because we're looking at like long-term growth. We're looking at sustainable growth for our clients. So what we do anytime we engage in a new client relationship, we ask the client, what are you working on? What are you trying to solve right now in your business? And we take a strategic consultative approach. And with that information that we gather back during onboarding, we uncover partnership opportunities where we can make, you know, warm introductions and connections into those partners that are valuable, that are, you know, based in actual needs of the business. And sometimes a client says, oh, you know, we need X, we need Y, we need Z. And then when Hawk goes in and we do our audit, we say, actually, you know, it's just X and Y that you need right now, and we'll scale into Z. So we'll build that mm-hmm. roadmap, which allows us to tap in partners at the appropriate time in their client engagement.
Wow. Interesting. Very interesting. And what do you see now happening in the market in terms of where are the areas that brands are looking to improve? Is it on the back end, supply chain, you know, SKUs reduction, or is it on the marketing side, more on the, you know, the advertising campaign, omnichannel? What are the, you know, key areas that you see brands are focused these days?
All of it. So, you know, what happens is we talk to someone and we start getting into their, you know, top of funnel and their advertising strategy. And then we start uncovering that their meta strategy may not be talking to their Google strategy. They may mm-hmm. have just scratched the surface on TikTok, but they're not implementing a TikTok shop or an influencer strategy. So there's opportunity to like layer in certain strategies. And, you know, when we dive deep, we find on the advertising side, just activating specific strategies, you know, based on timing and like rate of scale for like efficiency for ad spend, and ultimately just making sure that, you know, their spend is going towards the right audience, et cetera. So it's a lot of optimization on the advertising side of the business typically, mm-hmm. You know, or a brand has launched an advertising strategy and they've plateaued and they're like, what's next? How do we uncover more opportunities? And there might be opportunity that lies in their retention marketing or their life cycle strategy, which, you know, includes SMS, email, et cetera, or loyalty and membership to get repeat customers going back. So, you know, we'll look at every strategy and tap in like our growth experts, but we'll also quarterback different strategies to ensure that they're talking to one another and complementing one another, the strategies that is. And then when it comes to supply chain, really it's efficiency. So, you know, if we're advising on supply chain, if a brand has a brick and mortar store, or if they need distributed inventory, like what does their warehousing solutions look like? Because we have a network of logistic partners that we can bring in. And sustainability is top of mind in the logistics and supply chain space. Because, you know, you have stuff coming in from a manufacturer, if it's, you know, coming in through the port of Long Beach, there's that consideration of, you know, freight, that there's like carbon and, you know, very just like negative, like a lot of those solutions have like negative impacts to the environment. And brands that are thinking with like a sustainable first mindset, or with the environment first, they want to bring in partners throughout the whole entire ecosystem that are sustainable. So we help source those partners, and, you know, can advise. So sustainability has been top of mind for many brands. AI. So the efficiency factor in being able to, you know, it's like the old adage of like achieving more with less kind of thing. But it's just creating just a shorter time cycle between, you know, point A and point B, to just be able to do business more efficiently, which helps as more brands are scaling up and expanding.
Yes. And obviously, there are like very specific probably projects that customers said, hey, I need to improve my targeting. I need to improve my analytics side. I need to do something very specific, right? And then you can tailor a solution around that. But sometimes they will also come with like, hey, why don't you do some analysis of how we operate, give us recommendation and improvement, right? And then probably help us with the implementation. So there are obviously various engagement types that you see, correct?
Yeah, 100%. Because, you know, on the operational efficiency side and just like creating streamlined operations throughout the entire business process, we use a process called Hawk AI, which will benchmark a brand against 5,000 plus brands that we've worked with over the past 10 years. And we can say, you know, okay, you know, K-Swiss, this is where you sit in the competitive landscape in footwear, and see where that white space is against competitors, to then advise and say, well, you know, we forecast if you increase spend on this channel, that we'll see a lift in profitability, a lift in revenue, a lift in conversions in this area. So we're able to uncover the white space by doing that Hawk AI reporting process. And it gives us a good baseline and a foundation of where to start with our strategy. And all of that's zero party data. We own that data. We've worked with those brands, you know, over the past 10 years. So, you know, that really gives us a good, you know, competitive advantage as an agency. And it also gives our brands that we work with a competitive advantage.
Yes. I mean, understanding analytics, right? And definitely like omnichannel analytics, and also for the, definitely for those brands or retailers that have like an offline and online type of businesses, it's very difficult to understand where this purchase came from, right? And very difficult to understand whether you are overpriced or you pay too much on a specific channel, like doing like overpaid media in some channel. So these are like really, I think, serious pain points that maybe AI will help. Obviously, AI has a major role in this type of aspects, and I know that you're doing a very, very innovative work around that area. Where do you see AI is still, you know, implemented? Is it more on the cost reduction side? Is it more content side? Where do you see AI implemented these days?
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot of innovative AI solutions being plugged in across the entire customer journey. So, you know, AI, when it comes to creative, We have partners that will look at customer reviews as an example. And mm-hmm. the AI algorithm will look at what products have the highest review. Those are, you know, best sellers, most popular products, but it'll yeah. also scrape that against the advertising algorithm and like the distribution algorithm. So there's a higher likelihood of conversion for those creatives. So there's also, you know, tests that are done on the back end too. If the model doesn't know what direction to go in, it'll run mm-hmm. two at the same time until one's a winner. And it tends to get a lot of the, like, because things can sit in the learning phase if they're just sitting like in the meta platform, as an example, because there's not enough data. So it brings in that other data set of the customer reviews and runs an AI algorithm to have a higher likelihood of conversion. So there's like a lot of innovative integrations that are happening on the creative and advertising side. Also, mm-hmm. there's on the Shopify side of the business, we're a Shopify Plus agency. We work with mm-hmm. a lot of brands that sell on the Shopify platform. And you can talk to the back end of your Shopify now. So back in the day, analysts would have to go in, pull all your revenue numbers, pull things by channel, consolidate all that information. Nowadays, an analyst, ChatGPT style, can say, show me my last 6 months of revenue. And then boom, yeah. it just pulls all the data. So, you know, it creates more efficiencies, less downtime. We're able to make decisions faster, able to go to market faster, able to get through tests quicker, things like that. So that's another innovative AI through a company called Market AI, working mm-hmm. with Shopify. Also on the customer support side. So, you know, we have the chat bots now where you can like talk and say, one of the most popular ones is Wizmo, where is my order? That's the most popular one that happens on the Shopify okay. store. People are looking for their orders. Now, there are AI chat solutions that create the customer support function seamlessly and will tap in a human in the loop when it's needed. So, you know, nobody wants to talk to a bot all day long. You can kind of tell when something's like body. But sure. There's solutions that are out there that are like natural and native that, you know, it doesn't feel like you're talking to a robot in cyberspace. You know, it answers the most frequent questions because it's just a quick connection of the data dots. But when it's something that requires a human, then human gets tapped in. So we're seeing that functionality when it comes to AI in the CX space as well.
Yes, yes, very, very interesting. What are your thoughts on today's customer acquisition? I mean, I hear from every brand, I mean, from everyone that I've talked to and interviewed, that brand acquisition has changed. It's very, very difficult these days. Mm-hmm. I would love to have your feedback. What do you hear from your side? And what are really working strategies that are effective these days in terms of customer acquisition?
Yeah, well, when it comes to customer acquisition, it's really the consideration and, you know, kind of like marketing 101, that you want to ensure that, you know, you are connecting to the right audience. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen kind of these strategies where we've done an audit and there's just like no traction on a campaign, but that campaign's still running. And it's just like, you know, just spend is just going out the door just because it was like on a set it and forget it type of schedule. So, you know, like a thorough inspection just from the entire, you know, funnel, all channels, just to ensure that it's working properly. And then also, you know, looking past the digital channels. So there's a lot of like offline strategies that, you know, shouldn't be ignored either. So, you know, like showing up where it matters when it comes to like offline strategies or even like connected TV. So, you know, you need to be thinking about brand equity, brand awareness, yes. But that should be leading to down the customer acquisition path as well. So, you know, customer acquisition costs, it's no secret that they're like on the rise. It costs more to acquire a customer. But that could just be a like a channel consideration. So if you're diversifying on channels and you're like doubling down on a channel that's working, or you're merchandising differently on channels, you know, for example, selling different product on Amazon, your Amazon customer may look much different than your Target customer or your Walmart customer if you're selling in marketplaces. So ensuring that the right product mix is aligned with the right marketplace is important too, and that your paid ad strategy too is connected and specific to channel. Creating things that are channel specific is important.
Yes. Yes. And in terms of the multi-channel approach, I know that a lot of brands are looking to expand their channel outreach. They want to sell where their shoppers are spending time, whether it's on social or other marketplaces. And, you know, there was a latest report from Shopify that a lot of the brands are using multiple channels, sometimes even 10, right? And a lot of these brands, most of their sales are out of the Shopify, their own domain storefronts, right? Mm-hmm. So, how do you see this trend expanding, and what are some of the challenges that it needs to be aware of?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest challenge is resources and being able to track it all. Because if you're, you know, if you're selling into 10 channels, then you need to ensure that you have eyes on all those channels for efficiency. So,
yeah,
you know, we've seen brands that will like launch a B2B strategy, or they're, you know, working on getting into big retailers. And then, you know, as they're marching down that path, that's starting to grow. But then their D2C business, because there hasn't been attention there, you know, that, you know, tends to wane. So creating this like scalable approach where when you put efforts over here, you're not losing your efforts over there. So just being, you know, strong management on all sides of the house, and, you know, ensuring that you have like strong leadership that will look at the right metrics and ultimately ensure that you're not, you know, losing profit or you're not losing time.
Yes.
Just efficiency more than anything else.
Efficiency.
And then just resources, you know, it's another big one that we see too, is like a lean team. And then, but you know, for us, we can plug in where those gaps are, so we can help them scale essentially as like an extension of their business. So just ensuring that the right eyes and the right people are, you know, tracking the right metrics on those channels.
Exactly. So definitely putting the, you know, the right eyes on the channels, getting the data right to holistically observe what is going on and try to come up with some, you know, insightful decisions about next campaigns and where to spend the budget and everything. And I feel this is an area that obviously there is a lot of potential and improvement. This is one of the definitely the major trends for the next years. I want to talk to you also about brand positioning, brand building. I know you also have a lot of experience around that. What are some of the challenges that you see around the brand positioning these days?
Yeah, you know, I think when brands try to get like too fancy with it, you know, it's like too much, where it's like, the simplest solution is often the best solution. So breaking down, you know, I think about Simon Sinek, like coming back to the why. Why does this brand exist in the marketplace? What problem is this brand solving? What is the real true key differentiator that's like, you know, the just really just outstanding attribute of this brand, and making that stand out in all of your forward-facing marketing? Thinking about who this brand is made for, who it's going to appeal to. Does that mean we're doing, you know, like bright, fun colors, or we're more muted, or so the color aspect and the feel of the brand is so important. And making sure that the creative and like the language and the copy and all of that speaks to it. So you know, keeping the feeling and the true essence of the brand just alive through all of your communications, even through the human communications, you know, you know, brand building, it can be, I think the biggest challenge is like just trying to get too fancy with it, you know, sticking to the basics and to the true, like, This is why we exist. This is why we go to market and who we are, and just keeping it simple.
That's another big theme of going back to the basics, right? Trying to understand who we are, what we are strong at, making the strong stronger, and try you know, not to win every war out there, right? Pick your battles, obviously.
Yeah.
100%. That's Jen, what are some of the trends that you see right now in e-commerce, or specifically on the digital marketing side? How do you see 2024 evolving for the market?
Yeah. Well, we touched on it a bit, but AI. So there's a lot of automations and a lot of learnings that are happening in the artificial intelligence space. So, you know, that's starting to really have more of a stronghold in 2024. Also, you know, the personalization. So now that we're back to a sense of, you know, I want to say normal, but like nothing's ever normal, just a sense of, you know, normalcy in person. So like I'm here at eTail and I've run into old friends, new friends on the brand side, on the partner side. And one thing that really resonated with a lot of the brands is like, oh, it's so good to see you in person. It's been years. So like the personalization and the human connectivity. So it's funny, you know, AI is starting to really take off in a big way, but so is personal connectivity. So we're doing a lot of like strategic planning in person with our clients now. So, you know, it's like the whiteboarding, really, you know, strategizing. Because when folks are together in person, there's that element of just connectivity and creativity that happens that we do feel. We feel it here, you know, in the digital space, but we feel it tenfold, you know, because when we finish a session, have a lunch, you know, then we're like celebrating and like giving a hug and see you next time. And, you know, then there's like the human element. So bringing that human element back to things.
I mean, we are social creatures, right? We need a hug.
Mm-hmm. That's hugs are very good.
Hugs are good, yeah. Oxytocin, you know, boosters. So it's very, very important.
Release that serotonin, all the happy chemicals. Yes.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, we are social creatures. We like to hang out together. Definitely after COVID, so really great for all the shows and conventions to come back. And it's definitely part of the, you know, my yearly plan as well. So Jen, what's some of the tips you can provide to your partners, like the technology company side, that trying to come into the US market and trying to promote their products?
Yeah. So, you know, launching in the US, coming into the US from another market overseas, there's a lot of considerations as far as like landed goods, how much inventory you'll need, all of that. And then understanding if you're going to be in a specific geo area, and then having those be kind of your like pillars that you then build your advertising and marketing strategy around. You know, if you're looking at selling in store, what is that process look like? What does that timeline look like? And is that something that can work on the background while D2C is ramping up? So creating like a strategic roadmap for at least the first 2 years, but not being so like strict to that too, because different things can happen quicker. Different things might take a little longer. So like a scalable kind of accordion approach, and then like progress over perfection every day, because there's learnings to be had. Like you might go to market and then, you know, discover your California market is, you know, showing you learnings that you weren't expecting, or, you know, perhaps you're, you know, seeing these pockets of success in the Northeast that you're like, I wasn't expecting that. So, you know, not being held to the like planning or the expectation, letting the data and the consumer data really tell the story, and then knowing when to pivot and pivot quick to when, when changes need to be made. So just being nimble, flexible, and then just have a strategic plan that, you know, you can be flexible with if need be, I think is important.
Yes, I mean, having this agile mindset, right? And both from the like moving fast, of course, but also from the technology side, make the technology flexible and adapt to quick changes that are required in the market. And obviously for US market, which is such a big one, definitely in e-commerce, is going to have like a company-wide commitment for making this a success. Mm-hmm. Jen, I want to talk to you about so many other things. And I want to talk about many things that you do. Some of them are related to work, some of them are not. I want to talk about the Root Effect, you know, Indie Village, you know, groups in Hawaii, things that you do in India. So so first, maybe, you know, you're very passionate in the industry. You've been doing this for quite a while. What's keep you excited about our industry? And probably later, let's talk a little bit about many, many of the other things that you do.
Yeah. So, you know, our industry is ever evolving, which for me is what keeps it exciting. I like knowing that I'm waking up every day and every day is going to be different. There's, you know, new challenges, there's new technologies, you know, there's investments, there's, you know, there's always something happening in our world. That's in the name of progress, because as technology progresses, the way that we shop, the way that we, you know, consume content, the way that we just go to market as brands just changes on the daily. So keeping a pulse on that has always excited me. And the connectivity of, you know, culture, being able to do like global business, you know, I'm here and you're like way across the other side of the world and, you know, a different time zone, different day probably. Yeah. But here we are, you know, having the same conversation, working on solving the same challenges. So to me, that's really what keeps me going is our community and the banding together of our community to solve, you know, big challenges and to really face the market together. That's why I founded the Root Effect. So the Root Effect is a collective, you know, really. So it's more of a collective of partners, which allowed me to plug into my current role at Hawk and not be a one woman show too. So going from like consultant to VP was like a natural progression, because now I have a team, which is fantastic. And I'm still able to work closely with my partners and just bring my whole network in to solve these big challenges. So working together to solve big challenges and to evolve with the market is really what excites me and what has kept me going for so long, because I've been at it a while. Like when I was in e-commerce before, like Shopify was even around. So, you know, that's like 10 plus years now. So
yeah,
it's been an interesting journey, and just watching everything evolve has been really interesting.
Tell us about the India Village and, you know, you bring girls to code from India.
Yeah. So very passionate about technology. Also very passionate about just leveling the playing field for opportunity. So I do a lot of social impact work and had the opportunity to work with a group called Indie Village to help scale their marketing, business development efforts, and social impact efforts. So Indie Village is a nonprofit and bridging the gap between, you know, rural areas and Silicon Valley. So I worked on a project that helped bring Girls Who Code to rural India, because a lot of girls, a lot of women don't have access to education. They don't have access to economic opportunity. So creating those access points where they really matter will ultimately help teach skills that will help lift these groups out of poverty. So there's a lot of impoverished areas that are just so rural. It's like, you know, 10, 12 hours from a major city, which means limited access to healthcare, limited access to clean drinking water, limited access to education. So just creating opportunities and connecting these opportunities back to Silicon Valley. So, you know, learning how to code, you know, there was a lot of gals that I talked to in India that were young that wanted to learn a skill, but they just didn't have the means or the access to do so. So now there's several chapters that are stood up there. And then Indie Village, that group, they do a lot of data annotation. So, you know, groups in Silicon Valley that have, you know, very strong AI components or machine learning components, they need to annotate data to be able to train the model. So teaching that skill set in those rural areas has allowed to create new opportunities economically that just didn't exist in that area before. So very rewarding. What's interesting is I almost got stuck in India during COVID. So when I worked on that project pre-COVID and, you know, went and met with the schools, everything, and then I came back. It was like around this time in 2020. And they asked, hey, have you been to China in the past 2 weeks? Nope. Okay. You can get back on the plane. But if I would have left 1 week later from India, I would have been stuck there during COVID.
Wow.
So it was, it was important work. And we were able to keep that project going through COVID, by providing like laptops and, you know, different educational elements just as a donation. So that way the workers could still, you know, have the economic opportunity and work from home in rural India with, you know, laptops. That's, you know, really, you need internet, you need a laptop, and, you know, you can work. So we were able to like pivot quick during COVID too.
Nice.
Yeah, which was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, India is an amazing place, you know, whether you like it or you don't, but I've been there for maybe more than 50 times at least during my career, and spend a lot of time in very, very, you know, remote areas in India, building variety of telecom and video projects. And it's amazing. I mean, sometimes you go to a place, they don't have, probably you need to walk like 3 minutes to drink something or to the bathroom, but they have internet like in everywhere, right? So they're coding or they're doing something over the web, and it's a really fascinating place. You have some of the richest people and mansions and hotels, and some of the poor areas like that is, you know, you can even imagine. So crazy place.
I know it's the land of extremes, and yes, you know, it's just one of the many countries where our youth need support, our women need support, because, you know, we're very fortunate here in the United States for women to have access, for children to have access, but that's not the case in all countries. So you know, we have a lot of work to do to level the playing field. And, you know, it's something that I'm very passionate about, and something I'll continue to do no matter where my main career
is. Really? Wow. Nice. Yeah. Nice. Great, Jen. So this is the fun fact part of the episode. And I know you have a lot of fun facts, but maybe you choose two or three and share with us.
Yeah, so I'd say a fun fact that, you know, most folks don't know about me professionally is that I'm an improv comic. So
wow.
Yep. I perform once a month at the National Comedy Theater in San Diego, California, where I'm based. And, you know, that came from just a love of musical theater. So I'm a recovering musical theater artist. Mm-hmm. Had the opportunity to do some work in that space in college. I played Frenchie in Grease. So I always really admired just good, like, comedic timing on stage and just had a love for just performance and just acting and comedy. So, fun fact, I am an improv comic. You can come see me. My team name is Joke and Dagger. Okay. It's a great time. If you're ever in San Diego, stop on by. It's a ton of fun.
Definitely. Wow, I must. Yeah. Really, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, that's one of the fun facts. I have more if you want to know more. But
okay, let's do another one.
Another fun fact, I'm a singer in a rock band. So, you know, I sing and play the piano, and I'm in a band. So every Thursday night, we get together, we practice, we do covers, and, you know, it's just a fun creative outlet for me. That, you know, it's just amazing. Very, very rewarding, very enjoyable.
I mean, music and comedy, good for the soul, right? Releasing all this pressure, reducing the clutter. Yeah.
So good for the
soul. Well done, well done. Great balanced life, Jen.
Yes, that's what it's all about. Living life to the fullest.
Yes, yes. Right, Jen, anything you want to add?
I would just say, you know, anybody who's dreaming big dreams, just go after those dreams. I'm a big believer in, you know, if you have an idea, bring it to life. If you fail, that's all right. Fail forward. Keep on keeping on. And, you know, just bring more kindness and heart into our world every day and into our business practices every day, I think is good, you know. No one wants to do business with like a cold, buttoned up type of person. Even if you do know all the facts, you know all the things. bringing some heart and soul into work every day, I think, is important. So,
yeah, that's a very, very good summary. Thank you so much, Jen. Where is the best place for people to find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. It's Jen Root, JenRoot, Root, VP of Partnerships at Hawk Media. So hawkmedia.com, Hawke Media, MEDIA.com. And you can find me there on the website, find me on LinkedIn. Email jroot@hawkmedia.com is another way to reach out.
Great. So, Jen, thank you very much. I know you're in the middle of ETAIL, so we really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Great. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's Vimi, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.